In just a few moments, I will be calling up Eleanor Smeal. Well, talk about a woman's rights icon. I don't know who is bigger. anyway, she has done about it all. Twice the National Organizations for Women's president, and she founded the Feminist Majority Foundation, which she is the publisher of Ms. Magazine. And I am very privileged and proud to have Eleanor Smeal on the phone here from Washington, D.C. Good evening, Eleanor.
Good evening to you.
And, well, there's who knew there would be so much going on in women's rights again? We thought it was all basically put to bed and moving on.
We knew better than that.
We knew better than that.
They've been attacking us for years in every way you can conceivably think the right wing has been. And now, of course, what's made the news is the attempt to cut off contraceptives, family planning funding, the extensive attacks on Planned Parenthood. It's been quite something else.
It really has, and obviously your story goes back, if I may say so, quite a long way now, and a very impressive record. Now, it goes back to the early 60s, and...
No, not the early 60s. Oh. Well, if you go back to my college days, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like you were an activist back then.
Yes, I was. Those were the days we were fighting, obviously, what we still are, the civil rights question, and I was at Duke University at that time. But, no, I'm very proud that I've been working for women's rights and civil rights for now several decades.
What or who inspired you back then? What apart from being a woman, what inspired you?
Well, I think it's the situations. I mean, my first thing is that I never realized that at the time I was admitted to Duke that there was no African Americans, and so I think that was one of the first fights. But you know, the whole civil rights era of the 60s, and then of course the women's movement, and I got involved young and early and very active in now. I think it's the need. When you keep those people say, well, what inspires somebody to get active in a cause, you see a need and you try to help fill it.
Yes, indeed. And now going back to those days in the 70s, you joined now back in the early 70s, about 1970, but then in 77 you became the president of National Organization for Women. That was the year I came to America, and it was quite an amazing energy going through the country trying to, with those efforts to get the Equal Rights Amendment into law. A lot of people really have no institutional memory about that. Can you give us a brief outline, really, what happened and what?
It's hard to do anything like that briefly.
Yeah.
But just there was a great fight in the 70s, as you well know, and we passed a lot of legislation for equal educational opportunities, actually to prohibit sex discrimination in education. This is right after the decade of the civil rights, which in 1964, we passed the Civil Rights Act, which the nation did, which prohibited race discrimination, but also on the Title VII, a section of it prohibited discrimination on the basis of sex and employment. We then did education in 72. And all during this time, there was many lawsuits, demonstrations, all kinds of activity to further civil rights and women's rights. And we passed the Equal Credit Act in 75, Pregnancy Discrimination Act in 78. Well, part of this whole drive was to amend the Constitution to prohibit discrimination and put it in the fundamentally in the Constitution, because women were, when the Constitution were written, as you well know, were not included really. They weren't even allowed to vote. And although we fixed the vote in 1920, we really did not guarantee women's equal rights in the Constitution. And so we were going piece by piece, education, employment, credit, discrimination on the basis of pregnancy, but many other things too. And we thought, let's fix it once and for all. So the drive for the ERA, which really begins in 1923.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it was first introduced, comes out of the Senate literally 40 years ago, and it came out in March of 1972. And then we had to get three-fourths of the states to ratify. And we did not get three-fourths. We got 35. It failed in 1982. Although the drive continues, I can tell you right to this day, and it's been reintroduced in both houses of Congress. But we came very close, within six votes in three different legislatures, state legislatures, but we lost primarily in the South. And I believe, and it was largely because of business, major big corporation interests, especially the insurance companies. You know, women are charged different prices in insurance, for health insurance, life insurance, pensions, disability. So there is a vested interest. And then, of course, women are paid less. And those people who profit from women being taken advantage of in the workplace, they have a vested interest in keeping it that way. So they want the laws weak.
Exactly. And when it, I mean, basically the efforts petered out, but where did it leave it in terms of, did
it
get picked up?
Well, it didn't peter out. We had a very intense strategy. We knew how hard it was. So every inch of the way we passed state legislation and federal legislation. So not only were we working on the federal constitutional amendment, we were in its wake passing as much legislation as we could. And then when we realized we were trapped, because you have to remember, when we were going through in the 70s and 80s, very few women were elected in the state legislatures, or for that matter, in Congress. And it was really quite a, that we came so far was miraculous considering the conditions. So we, as we were going, we were building a political movement to increase the number of women in elected office, to increase women's organizations. And those fights keep going on. I mean, and we win some. I think we've won more than, in many ways, we've lost. However, the big goal of passing full equality under the Constitution, we still have not achieved. And right now we're in a backlash period with a very strong right wing that is trying to take away women's rights. Title VII was struck down, you might as well say, by the current court, the Roberts Court. And so we had to fight to reinstate it, and did that with the Lilly Ledbetter Act, which President Obama signed. It was the first bill he signed in 2009. So they've tried to undo the guarantee of equal educational opportunities, or the elimination of sex discrimination in education at Title IX. We've had to fight to restore it both in the 80s, the 90s, and again now in 2000s. I mean, it has been a battle royal. You get something on the books, and they try to take it off. Especially the right-wing forces, I could, you know, name exactly all the groups, but we have managed to, for the most part, keep the gains of the 70s on the books, but the constant attempt to eradicate them. One of the gains of the 70s was Title X, which is a family planning funding, a national family planning funding program, which was established in the early 70s. It had no attacks directly until now, and now the attacks are quite massive. Defunding of Title X, or they're trying to cut out Title X, the Republican Congress of the House, where they have a majority, moved to totally defund it in the last session. And if they could, they would now. But it's stopped by the President and the Senate. And in state after state, over 1,100 measures were introduced in 2011 after the Republicans win the 2010 elections to cut back family planning. And they've succeeded in far too many states. Yeah, and this year it's even worse. Some of these, they're outrageous, trying to have a vaginal probe inserted for a sonogram if you seek an abortion, all kinds of conditions being placed on women who try to seek abortion. And then the cutting of family planning has been just outrageous. New Jersey, the governor there, who some people, you know, try to pass off as a moderate, Christie, has vetoed all family planning funding. It's cut by 2/3 in Texas. I think it was 40% in Indiana. Anyway, so right now we're fighting for both access to contraception as well as abortion.
I'd like to think that it's sort of a last gasp throwback, but I'm getting worried that with such a broad network going against it, how are you pushing back?
The fight back is massive. All the women's organizations, Her Votes, which is a coalition that has come together, which has over 50 major women's organizations, and you name them, all the big ones, have band together for the first time to build a women's vote. We see that there are 12 major gains for women totally under attack. By the way, even the right to vote is under attack. Here we thought that was sacrosanct, right? But they are targeting, there's an effort to suppress the vote by the Republican right wing of older people, especially older women, of students, and of people of color. And how it affects women peculiarly is that, let's just take older women for a change, for example. They're demanding that you have to present government-issued IDs. Well, a lot of older women are not driving, or are no longer driving.
Right.
So they go to vote, and they have to have a government-issued ID. Well, that sounds pretty easy, but if you're poor or your money's tight, you go to the and you don't know that you can go to the Department of Motor Vehicles of your state and get a government issue ID. You might not even know that. It's not even being broadcast. So you've been voting for years. You go, and normally you just have to show your ID of who you are, and you just have to normally show, like, if you have a utility bill or something like that to guarantee that you live at that residence. Now they're asking for a driver's license. Well, some people don't drive, especially women who are either low income or elderly. And so then they say, well, you don't have the so-called government issue ID, that you have to produce your birth certificate. Or now a lot of women, especially older women, their name might have changed.
Oh, yeah.
So they have a married name, which is not the name on the birth certificate. So then they say, well, we have to have your marriage license. Well, you know, give me a break. Go there to vote. Who knew you needed to bring your marriage license and your birth certificate? So basically, all these are to try to knock out voters. The student IDs, they used to recognize, if you had like your school, you know, ID with a picture, that was good enough. But now they want a government-issued one. And even if you go to a state school in some states, they don't count that as a government-issued one. So again, you have to try to figure out where you get your government-issued ID. All of this is to try to knock people off the rolls. And remember, women are the majority of students right now. But we're not voting the way the Republican right wing wants. So they're trying to decrease our votes.
Interesting. What is that balance generally of how women are voting?
About 60% of the Democratic Party votes now are coming from females. And the gender gap for Mr. Obama right now, he has a 20-point gender gap, meaning he has a tremendous preference by women. I mean, that is the backlash to this right-wing Republican attack. So basically, there's been a gender gap really since the 1980s because of Reagan's opposition to the Equal Rights Amendment. That was the formation of the gender gap. And in those days, it was about 8 points. But it's quite large now. The president was elected by, he had a very solid majority among women. And then, of course, Clinton became the first president elected with a majority of women. In fact, for Clinton, if only men had voted, he wouldn't have been president. So you have a preference there, and it's because of policies. I mean, you know, if in fact, remember who, it was Republican judges that fought the, Title VII, which was the employment guarantee. It was President Obama that put it back in with the Lilly Ledbetter Act. Now, of course, if the Equal Rights Amendment would pass, we wouldn't have to worry about who gets elected every time. We could have a constitutional guarantee, which, you know, let's face it, American women deserve that. You know, just think of the hypocrisy that we demand that Afghanistan, Iraq have equal rights provisions in their constitutions for women, and we don't have one ourselves.
Pretty sick, isn't it? Yeah. Very hypocritical, the very least, immoral, and every other word, I would say. When you speak, obviously you must interact with some of the more right-wing people. Where does their argument come from? What is the basis for that?
Well, I've debated how many years now. I've long ago believed that if we did not have major vested interests, business interests opposed to us, most of this would disappear. There is really profit and discrimination, and it's always covered up. I'll give you an example. Right now, the Affordable Care Act, in it, that's called by the opponents Obamacare. There's a clause in there, a provision that says that you cannot discriminate against women in insurance pricing. Right now, the average woman pays 48% more for health insurance with the same coverage as men. In other words, they pay significantly more than men for the same coverage. And most health insurance does not cover maternity. Now, under the Affordable Care Act, the provision says you cannot discriminate on the basis of sex in pricing. Okay?
Right.
Well, so, you know, obviously, the health insurance companies do not like that because they can rip us off. Secondly, there now is a requirement under the Affordable Care Act that health insurance covers maternity.
Ah.
I mean, give me a break. It should cover maternity.
Hey, we're getting into the 19th century here.
Yes. I mean, it's just preposterous that it didn't. And they use the excuse that they charge us more because they say we get pregnant and then they don't even cover maternity. I mean, think about the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And then there is now under the Affordable Care Act a preventive care package. The theory being if people got preventive care, it wouldn't cost as much to cover them. Right now, because people can't afford the preventive care, illnesses get worse, and so it's obviously more costly at an advanced stage. So the preventive care package includes cancer screening, which has no co-pays and no deductibles. So lower-income people can get mammograms if they're a woman. They can get, the colon cancer screening if they're a man or a woman. They can get breast cancer, mammograms, I say, et cetera. Pap smears without co-pays or deductibles. In that preventive care package, the Obama administration has now included contraceptives. Okay, so now there's a big hue and cry about that from the Catholic, from the National Conference of Catholic Churches. Now, mind you, They were opposed to the Affordable Care Act before that requirement.
Okay.
They have fought it every inch of the way. Now, are they fighting it because of the... what is the cause of the fighting? If you realize they own insurance companies, and if you realize that most that the health insurance companies were the biggest opponents of the Affordable Care Act, I think that the human cry is more over trying to kill the Affordable Care Act.
So,
and as you know, the Republican presidential candidates, and the party in Congress has said they will repeal it if they get the votes.
So it's a real smokescreen then.
My experience and all my work, most of the arguments are smokescreens for what is the bottom line. Money is a big driver for policies or for, you know, public policies that discriminate. They argue for everything else, but when it comes right down to it, it affects somebody's bottom line.
Right.
And those somebodies tend to, for whatever excuses, and they have all kinds of excuses, want to keep it so that it's easier to discriminate.
Right. Follow the money, and that gives the
Follow
answer.
Follow the money. One of the things I wanted to say on contraception, people say, the church has this position. But as you well know, the Roman Catholics, you know, something like 98% and polling, use birth control. So what are they, and this is another thing, in many states, prior to the Affordable Care Act, there's requirements that they cover, that health insurance covers contraceptives. And they comply with that. So then why is the big hue and cry now, when they were providing it more in half the states anyway? But again, if you look at it, they're really opposed to the Affordable Care Act. So if that's, I think, is being used as a weapon to try to make people think the Affordable Care Act takes away religious rights, which it obviously doesn't for individual women or for anybody else, because really you don't have to use that option if you don't want to. What they're saying is you can't exclude that option.
Right.
Anyway, I could go on for hours, but basically, the Affordable Care Act itself is a very big advance for women, because it does provide preventive care, coverage. It provides maternity coverage as a mandate. It also, has many, many other features. The most important one for women is, it may be the most important, they're all important when you look at it, as a package, is that they can't charge you a higher price. That they can't discriminate against you in pricing. And also, as you well know, they can't use preconditions or to deny coverage, that you had something, so now you can't be covered for that. So it's very, very important legislation.
Yes, indeed. That's prying the fingers off the edge of the cliff type of thing for them. Mm-hmm. Now, how much, as a component of the whole healthcare bill, how much would the contraceptives a package cost out of that?
Oh, very virtually not. The contraceptive part of it is the cost savings. For every dollar spent on contraceptives, $4 is saved. Now, how do you figure? Because having children, obviously, is having a baby is more expensive, number one. But number two, there's all kinds of maternal illnesses that you obviously would space out. But not only that, you have healthier infants and healthier results when the woman decides whether or not she wants to be pregnant. We know that too early of pregnancies usually result in more complications. And I could go on, but we know statistically all kinds of studies that have been done. For every dollar of family planning, you save $4. Most importantly, you have better health results for both the mother and future children, because they're taking, it's at a more optimal time. So there's no cost. It's a savings.
It's a savings.
Yes, absolutely a savings. That's why I think it's being used as a weapon to really just destroy the Affordable Care Act. But the whole preventive care package is saves money. If you get a mammogram and you get discover cancer early, it's going to be a lot less costly for the insurance provider or the general public and certainly saves a lot of pain and suffering than if you get it at a late stage. It's the same thing with pap smears. It saves not only pain and suffering, it also saves money to get something at a very early stage. Colon cancer is the same thing. So right. The preventive care package is a cost savings, no question about it. But again, the fear of, it's going to cost you more money. Well, first place, it's going to provide health insurance for the first time to millions of people that are not currently covered. And so is that a savings of money? Of course it is, because if you present yourself very ill at a hospital, the hospital can't turn you away.
Right.
So who's paying for that? The taxpayers.
Exactly.
But if you have insurance, you know, and it's a reasonable cost, and you have preventive care and annual exams and that, you're saving money in the long run.
Right. It's getting that message across, isn't it, with that noise.
Against the constant lies. Constant lies and deceptions.
Exactly.
So in fear tactics, it's going to cost you more money. There won't be enough doctors. Well, come on. We're the richest country in the world. We can't afford to have train more doctors. In fact, the Affordable Care Act provides scholarships and academic help in academics to get more general practitioners, more nurse practitioners, so that more people will be covered.
Yeah.
To me, it's flabbergasting that we think it's okay that literally thousands upon thousands of people die because they don't have adequate medical treatment in our country every year.
And
the rest of the industrialized world can do it. But somehow we can't do it. And right now our own medical system is no longer rated top in results because there's not enough competition and the insurance companies dictate. And so you have a rationing. If you're lucky enough and have enough money, yes. But if you don't...
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. It's, the basic rights of no matter where you are or how much money you have, that should be irrelevant, isn't it, in this country?
It should be basic rights, but also it's basic good sense, and it's cheaper. And that's the part that, why the current administration has been saying, we have to save money. The best way of saving money is to make sure everybody's insured and that you have some competition in that insurance. That's why they're setting up state insurance exchanges that people can choose their policies. And you have some preventive medicine. It becomes normal. Accept it, so you don't let small things become big and far more costly.
We've been talking about the smoke screens, and the biggest one has been the name calling that has been going on in this process by the talk show nabobs. What an incredible scene that was in Congress, where there was not one woman on a committee to talk about women's health.
Why were they so afraid of one woman law student who not only spoke the truth to power, and it was making very clear the need not only for contraceptives for birth control, but for health conditions like ovarian cyst or endometriosis. It's incredible. And then, first the Republicans deny her as a witness. She was going to be the only Democratic witness. And they had, the Republicans had nine. But then on the first panel, they didn't even have one woman. So the Carolyn Maloney from New York, Congresswoman from New York, says, "Where are the women? This is about birth control." And she was denied testimony on the grounds she was not an expert. Give me a break. So they had only religious figures, all of whom were male, and then the Democrats decided to hear her, asked for broadcasting rights, were denied it. Minority Leader Pelosi was denied those rights. So what do? They build more press came, trying to see why are they trying to shut up this poor woman law student. But if that wasn't enough, the kicker was Rush Limbaugh, who then goes to the air and calls her names.
Right.
Then he makes these outrageous statements like, well, why should the taxpayers have to pay for her birth control? She having this much sex and he wants videos of it. I mean, give me a break. Does he not know, or do they just like to obfuscate? So does he not know that this is for insurance plans? The students pay for those insurance plans. They just want the coverage in the insurance plan that they're paying for. And it has nothing to do with what taxpayers aren't paying for this at all. And so that's, you know, and then does he think that the way contraceptives work is that the more that you take it every time you have sex? What does he think? It's just crazy what he's saying. But then to kick it off, a large portion of her testimony was on the need for these hormones for treatment. In her case, in the story she was talking about, was for ovarian cysts.
Mm. So it was absolutely nothing even to do with
she did say that some students wanted for birth control, and but she was talking, a large part of her testimony was about a student at Georgetown who had ovarian cysts and could not get, you know, you had to prove that it wasn't for birth control. Somehow she didn't do that and couldn't afford it because it was costing her $100 a month. So she drops the coverage, and of course the cysts get worse. She has to have emergency surgery. She loses the ovary, and it's put her in early menopause.
So at a great cost, more cost.
That's what we're saying, is so many things could be preventive. People must make their own health care decisions, and talk show hosts, in my opinion, the only, and frankly, no one has that right besides her on the advice of a medical doctor.
Right. Exactly. And the sad thing also is the certainly the Republican candidates for president all ran and hid or just really said even worse things in that process that really piled on top.
Well, they're taking stands that are just make no sense. I mean, this whole business of No interference with the process from fertilization on. Well, something like 40% of fertilized eggs are flushed naturally from the body.
Mm.
So, you know, it makes not even good biological sense. But from the standpoint of interference in women, for a woman, it's quite catastrophic. I mean, if some of these people are okay and laws that would interfere with the use of an IUD, intrauterine device, maybe interfere with the treatment of cancer, if you'd have uterine cancer, for that matter, cancer in any other part of your body. Because if you can't interfere with the fertilization process, can you take chemotherapy? Mm. I mean, I could go on and on.
Interesting.
And you wouldn't even know if you're pregnant at the time of fertilization. You don't know that early.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't make biological sense. And then are you going to start investigating every miscarriage to see was the miscarriage, I mean, as if the police don't have enough to do it. We're going to be in a total police state. You're not pregnant. Did she do something? Are we going to say that if you don't have a pregnancy every year or two, that you must be, you know, interfering with the fertilization process?
Think
about it. It is terrifying that these folks who say they want limited government are now going to become the police over the uterus of the woman.
Well, and that's the sad thing is it's taking a satire from like the Doonesbury Strip and from the Daily Show and Colbert to really speak the truth to what's happening. We don't see much elsewhere.
Well, it's because it's almost, you have to laugh least you cry, but comedians can show the idiocy of it and the ridiculousness of it better, really, than you can in talk and try to speak rationally about what is really an irrational process.
Exactly.
Or an irrational position, let's put it this way. And then it's like these men, older men, somehow have decided if they're the guardian of a 16-year-old or 17-year-old's reproductive decisions, that somehow that makes them moral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They must feel good about themselves.
It's preposterous. And if you look at things like priest pedophilia and other scandals, you say to yourself, what are they doing? What are they talking about?
Where does the real problem lie? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you helped found the Feminist Majority Foundation and Ms. Magazine, which is what its 40th anniversary is this year?
Yes, it's the 40th anniversary. We were not the founders of Ms. Magazine, as you know, Gloria Steinem was.
Oh, yes.
But we have been publishing it now for over 10 years. And the Feminist Majority Foundation is a multi-issue group. We do many different things. One of our largest projects, in addition to Ms. Magazine, is our campus program. We have leadership groups on something like 600 campuses. And so we're helping to train and educate the next generation of feminist activists, and that's very exciting. And we're in 45 states with that project. We do work in reproductive rights, defending clinics that are being unfortunately harassed and in some cases even terrorized to this very day by anti-abortion extremists. So we're in many different areas. We also we help to found and lead the campaign against gender apartheid in Afghanistan. We started that campaign in 1996 when the Taliban took over Kabul. We were the first organization in our country to come out against the Taliban.
Mm. Oh, very interesting. And mm-hmm. Wow. Well, how can...
Before the United States government, we encourage the government to come out and the United Nations to come out against the Taliban, which had at that time taken all human rights away from women, the right to work, the right to go to a hospital because they could not be observed, by a male doctor.
Right.
And they made it illegal for females doctors to practice. I could go on. The treatment of women was horrific. It was like out of a nightmare scenario. And we came out to demand that the United States government and the United Nations not recognize this government. And fortunately, in 1998, they did not, and they announced that they did not before a woman's audience, because obviously we were the people who were demanding that they did not. So right now we don't want the Afghan woman to be forgotten in a peace process that might not consider their rights as important, because we think and know that how you treat women in many ways is the canary in the mine.
Exactly. And I know initially there were women in that process. Is that still the case, or how has that changed over there in Afghanistan?
Well, we've been demanding there be women at the peace tables. It's very hard to tell. I'm very encouraged, though, by Secretary Clinton's position and the administration's that they have put women's rights high. I know there has been progress, not like anything we would want, but it's certainly there's now about 25 to 30% of the women of the people in college now are women. There are about 18 colleges or institutes of higher education operating. There's 8 million children or thereabouts in school now, of which about 35 to 40% are female. The maternal mortality rate is still very unacceptable, but it has improved lately as more and more midwives are trained. And So there is, you know, like there's over 100 female judges. About 20-some percent of the parliament is female. Now, believe me, I don't think the parliament, you know, those we don't have enough. I mean, I'm telling you some good things.
Yeah.
But there's long distance to go.
Yeah.
But there are heroic women who risk their lives every day fighting for women's rights in Afghanistan. There's now many nonprofit women's organizations operating who are providing education, domestic violence shelters, and health care. So I think that there is progress and that we should be for these women. And frankly, I hope we continue that we give more money to the civic development. Clinton, Secretary of State Clinton, just announced that we're opening a new a center at the American University in of Afghanistan for women's empowerment economically.
What brave people to do that. I can only imagine what the conditions are like.
Well, they're tough, and I have had the honor of meeting some of these courageous women. I fight for women's rights in this country, but in their country, it is definitely very, very dangerous. And yet they do. And some have been assassinated. They're very well aware of that, and they keep fighting on. I really feel when you said, what makes you do it? It's the need. And these are courageous women. There's many educated women there. The majority are not, but there are educated women, brilliant women, who are fighting on.
Wow, incredible. And obviously, that brings up here in this country, Violence Against Women Act that expired.
That's right.
I know there's been some back and forth on that. It seems like their other protections are being threatened within that.
Well, it's just been preposterous. The act was passed for the first time in 1994. I was a leader in that drive to pass it in 1994. It's been reauthorized twice in 2000 and 2006, but it came up for reauthorization last year and it expired. Now, this year, it came out of Judiciary Committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, and if you can believe it, by a 10-8 vote, all eight Republicans voting no, 10 Democrats voting yes. I mean, why are they doing this? You talk about a war on women. Why would you do this? Now, the good news is we do have the votes to fight with cloture, which is right now to get anything out of the Senate, you need 60 votes. We got the 60 votes. So I think it will come out of the Senate, but will the House take it up? Why was that a 10-8 vote? Now, there are some Republicans who have now announced they're going to go with us, so we're hoping that this is the path, but this should not be a partisan bill. This should...
it's unbelievable. Really, I mean, you know, where's the bad there? It's just incredible.
It's preposterous.
Yeah.
There's nothing, there's no reason for it. The bill has been shown to, the act has helped millions of women. The hotline, there's a national hotline for victims of domestic violence to call, and, you know, it helps hundreds of thousands of women. Yeah. Has. I mean, there's no question it's needed.
Yeah.
It gives money for and training to combat domestic violence. It gives resources to police. It gives training to police and to judiciary authorities, and it helps organizations combating violence against women.
Yeah.
It's just preposterous to be have any trouble. It should have been automatically reauthorized.
Exactly. Well, what can our listeners do? What information can they get? How can they help?
Well, they can help by going to hervotes.us, and you can see all the current legislation and advances for women that are under threat. You can see all the women's groups that are fighting it, and you can the reason I'm referring you to that site is that you can then link to any of the women's groups and see what they're doing. Our email is for the feminist majority is feminist.org. Our website is www.feminist.org, and the and Ms. Magazine is msmagazine.com. No period after Ms., just MS, the magazine. So you know, you can start there, and you can. But Her Votes is, it will tell you really what's in trouble, and it links to everything from Feminist Majority, National Organization for Women, Planned Parenthood, YWCA, League of Women Voters. A whole host of women's groups have come together. By the way, an interesting little fact is the YWCA came out for birth control access. Way back in the 30s. We're fighting some of these battles that were fought for in the 1930s. I mean, think about it. It's just preposterous that we're going to go backwards. So anyway.
It's sickening.
And it's hervotes.us.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Eleanor Smeal. What an incredible body of work you've done and are still doing. As you say, there's a need, and thank goodness you're there to help.
Well, it's been my privilege, and thank you very much.
Oh, it is a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on KOWS.
Okay, good night.
Good night.